Welcome, one and all, to episode 94 of the NFL Draft Breakdown Podcast. I'm your host, Seth Cox. With me tonight, my co-host and roving Draft Breakdown scout, Justin Higdon. Justin, you made the trip out to Iowa City to watch the Hawkeyes beat down the Wyoming Cowboys. And we're going to talk a little bit about that game. We're going to talk a little bit about Sam Darnold and his interesting game against Western Michigan, and they almost rode the boat right over in the Coliseum. And then we'll talk about maybe the guy that should be getting the hype as quarterback one. Finally, we'll wrap it up with a look heading into this weekend's games and getting ready for this weekend. But before we get started, Justin, how was Iowa City? Hanging out with Kyle Posey, maybe drinking a couple adult beverages?
Yeah, it was great. Actually, it was really easy drive from Chicago to Iowa City. I had a hotel in a good spot down, I guess, in the center of Iowa City. We had a great tailgate spot right across the street from Kinnick Stadium. So it was a lot of fun. I had a good time. I was able to stay up and stay awake through halftime of the Alabama-Florida State game. But it was all in all a great time. I stayed the entire time for the Wyoming-Iowa game. I had some great people sitting around me, and we got to see what Josh Allen was made of, and we'll get into that. But it was a rough, rough outing for Josh Allen, a guy who was projected by some people to be a potential number one pick going into this weekend.
Yeah, and it was a rough outing for the top two guys who have been pledged to be the first and second picks of the 2018 NFL draft. Josh Allen, Sam Darnold. I don't know. People might get sick of us talking about quarterbacks. I doubt it, though, because our buddy Ryan Day at Ryan Eats Cake on Twitter tweeted out the numbers of his Jags site, Big Cat Country. And somebody asked, why do you always write about Brandon Allen? And so he tweeted out the views, and it was like 400, 800, 1,000, and then an article on Brandon Allen had like 15,000 views. Quarterbacks move the needle, man. Like, if you get tired of it, I understand. We're going to do a better job of starting to put some time stamps on stuff so you can skip over it if you need to. But it moves the needle, and it is the most important position in all sports.
Quarterbacks are in right now. I mean, they're always in, and there's always teams looking for quarterbacks, especially at the beginning of the season in college football, and when you're scouting live games, the easiest thing to do is focus on the quarterbacks. And you can kind of go back to the other guys later in a lot of cases. Draft Breakdown, of course, does a great job of singling out guys and separating them for their own videos. But right now, when I traveled – to Iowa City specifically to see Josh Allen play against Iowa. And so the narrative right now is that Josh Allen doesn't play up to the competition level. So say what you will about his supporting cast and whatnot, but I have some numbers here. After two interceptions, no touchdowns against Iowa, and granted, he had one very impressive throw where he evaded pressure, stepped up in the pocket on the move, threw it on target for what should have been a touchdown pass. It got bobbled, and it was originally ruled a touchdown. And then upon review, it was the receiver had bobbled it. His knee hit out of bounds, and it was ruled incomplete. That drive resulted in a missed field goal. But for the game, Allen was in the low 50% as far as completion percentage. He had touchdowns.
So right around his career average.
What's that?
I said right around his career average.
Yeah, right. And he had no touchdowns. He had two interceptions. And it just was not a good outing for him. So that now the narrative around him is that he does not play well when he's facing better competition. Now, there's not much to go on there. He's only got 15 career starts, I think. So three of those starts have come against Nebraska, Iowa, and BYU. Those are his big out-of-conference, out-of-the-Mountain West Conference opponents. And in those games, he's 58 for 104. That's a 55.8% completion percentage. He's thrown for 570 yards in three games, 5.5 yards per attempt, three touchdowns, nine picks. And he's rushed 21 times for 35 yards. That's 1.7 yards per carry. So he's not getting it done against these teams. That being said, I had some response to my criticism. I said, look, simply put, he's not playing up to his competition. My tweet was, look, Josh Allen has one money throw today, and it was dropped. The dude has been a question mark against his top competition, period. And I had somebody reply to me, he has three calls to throw downfield. Watch the tape. Terrible coaching. I was there. I have watched the tape. You know, it's ridiculous. These things, like, people can twist it however they want. They can say that this guy doesn't have a supporting cast. They can say whatever they want. But the fact of the matter is he is not stepping to the plate when he needs to. People are going to be paying attention to that. NFL people are going to be paying attention to that. The watch the tape crap doesn't fly here. It just simply doesn't fly. Josh Allen's he's got to dominate the Mountain West the rest of the year. Otherwise, I mean, look at a guy like Cooper Rush, for example, who did very well in the preseason. He's going to be a backup for the Dallas Cowboys, but he went undrafted. He wasn't dominant in the MAC. I think Josh Allen's probably a better prospect than that. You know, if you were talking about a player who's going to ultimately outplay his draft status and become a backup, that would be one thing. But no, people are talking about Josh Allen as a number one pick. Outside of having great arm strength and being an athlete, those two things are factual. But he's not proving to be a very good quarterback, at least as far as, you know, his development to this point. So I don't see it. I expected, you know, look, I said it then. I didn't set out to be a hater. I set out to go and take a closer look at this guy, and it just validated everything that I've said about him to this point. He's just not the type of prospect that people are saying he is. Could he still be a day two prospect? I think there could be a fair argument to that if you're just basing it on tools. I mean, hell, Christian Hackenberg went in the second round. That was a mistake, but, you know, maybe Allen's a little bit farther along. I don't really know, Seth. I mean, what has he done to justify any hype at this point?
Well, and I think that's where the difference is for us. We've talked about this with, I mean, hell, go back to the Carson Wentz draft. I was definitely a Carson Wentz fan, but I didn't understand the hype at two. I didn't get it. Now, neither of us were Jared Goff guys, but I didn't understand the Wentz at two stuff. You were on the, like, Wentz is a, I think you said late day two, early day three type.
Right. And I had Goff a little ahead of that. That might have been too generous.
And the thing is maybe you and I are overly cautious against prospects now or, you know, towards prospects now. But when you look at what they've done, you have to be able to explain what you're seeing and you have to be able to explain what they've produced. When we talked about DeShone Kizer last year, we were able to maybe explain away is a bad terminology, but we were able to explain why that 56% completion percentage was low. And he was closer to, you know, right above 60% for his final season at Notre Dame.
Right. I think it was like 59%. And then if you took out the Hurricane game, it was like 60 or 61%. But yeah, I mean, Kizer had better performances against better teams in 2 years of starting than what we've seen out of Josh Allen too.
Well, and that's, and neither of us, I mean, you were because you're a Browns fan, but neither of us were like, hey, DeShone Kizer is a lockdown number one pick. Like, that wasn't.
No, but I admit, I said he was a first round pick.
Right. And so when you look at this, you're not saying, I'm not saying that Josh Allen is not worthy of a top 100 pick. We've never said that. What we're asking is, where is this top player in the draft? where is this performance? Where is this? Where, when are we going to see that player? And I think that's a fair question to ask.
That's just it. I mean, that really is it. When are we going to see that type of player that is being built here? That was one of my problems with Wentz, but at the same time, you had a guy who was relatively dominant, at least at the FCS level. And a guy, when he was playing up in when they did have that one FBS game a year, he was playing up to it in his 2 years as a starter. I had a lot of questions about Wentz. I don't want to rehash all of those things. Allen's a younger prospect. But where's that signature game? Where's that signature win for this guy? There were more moments out of Kaiser that made me really understand why I thought that he was a top prospect and why I thought he would have continued to develop had he been given a fair shake in college. You know, Josh Allen has all season to improve upon this last week's game. That game was against a tough defense. And to Allen's credit, he said, look, this is the toughest defense I'm going to face all year. That's good, but it's also a middle-of-the-road Big Ten team. And there are other quarterbacks facing that type of defense week in and week out. He better go beat up and bully those Mountain West teams. And really, I understand the supporting cast argument. I think there's some legitimacy to that. I really do.
Here's the question I have for that. You know, if you're listening to the show, go ahead and tweet me at @scoxfb and let me know. But last season, where he had his breakout season, 56% completions, I think it's just over a 2-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. He had multiple offensive teammates get drafted and make NFL rosters. And somebody said, where's his weapons? Well, my answer to that would be, who was Pat Mahomes' weapons last year? What guys from Notre Dame last season got drafted? Now, I know McGlinchey is going to get drafted, and their offensive line was pretty good, but the weapon.
And St. Brown, Equanimeous St. Brown is going to get drafted. But Josh Adams will get drafted. But
he isn't the player he is now. I mean, that's the other thing. Is he wasn't. And if you go back to Kaiser's freshman year, you know, it wasn't like it was a standout. I mean, Will Fuller, who Draft Twitter hates, was what, his number one. So,
right. He was the number one when Kaiser was probably doing his best work as a redshirt freshman. And how much do we really want to use this crutch about supporting cast? At some point, who is Wentz's supporting cast? Who is Wentz's supporting cast? This guy got drafted second overall. You know, he still put up numbers. He still was a dominant player to some degree in those FCS games. And he still played better against FBS competition than what we've seen out of Josh Allen when he's playing these Power 5 opponents. I think that the expectations placed on Josh Allen have been unfair to Josh Allen.
Exactly. And I think that's what you and I have hit on
If you were talking about a guy, yeah, Seth, if you're talking about a guy who you were saying, like, look, he could be a third or fourth round pick and he could elevate to a starter at some point because he has great tools, then you would have probably had my ear. But instead, he was being billed as a third overall pick and better than some of these guys that just got drafted in the first round and the second round last year.
Most people said he would have been the first quarterback drafted.
Yeah, no, I think that's crazy. What's the evidence of that? Where have we seen that player? When have we seen him?
And again, I always go back to them. Why is he back at Wyoming? If he was going to be drafted second overall or third overall by the Bears, why is he back at Wyoming?
There's been fair criticism already, and there have been people who have called it out, and it was ignored to this point. And I think people are now – there was a huge segment of people just being quiet on Saturday, and then there were still those holdouts who were telling – people who are actually in attendance to watch the tape, and those people just sound delusional at this point.
Sam DeArnold, another, the other, you know, kind of favorite to be the top guy, Heisman favorite, first team All-American, came out, laid an egg against Western Michigan. And this isn't your dad's Western Michigan row the boat team. This is sans PJ Fleck. This is sans Corey Davis. This is, you know, without their senior quarterback who, you know, set all kinds of Western Michigan records. This is a new team, and this was at the Coliseum in LA, and just not the performance you expected, again, with the hype coming into the year.
Yeah, Darnold, he was pretty up and down this game, and I haven't had a chance to view the whole game. Unfortunately, the Pac-12 is very, very protective of their video footage. But what I did see out of Sam Darnold was an up-and-down performance highlighted by two interceptions. But then if you dig into the numbers, he was 5 of 5, converted 5 first downs when it was 3rd down and 7 yards or longer to go. So here's this guy who I think the argument has always been that he's kind of a rise-to-the-occasion guy. And that he's not pretty when you look at him. Obviously, he has that long windup, which we've talked about. And there are still photos out there on Twitter side by side with Darnold and Blake Bortles of that windup, of that ugly, ugly windup. And it gives you pause. I think the criticism, one of the criticisms of Darnold is the windup. Another one is that he might not have the strongest arm. Those are similar criticisms of what we heard for Blake Bortles. So I think this kid was crowned prematurely too, just like Josh Allen. The difference is Sam Darnold goes to USC, so that premature crowning was even more widely accepted. So it's time to pump the brakes on this guy. He doesn't have a touchdown pass yet this year. He has 2 picks, but he has been really clutch on 3rd downs. And that kind of goes along with what we saw as far as him playing in the Rose Bowl last year when he was really clutch. So he's kind of an enigma to me. That was only his 10th career start. And Western Michigan, clearly no slouch MAC team, but still a MAC team playing on the road at USC. You would have thought that he could have chewed them up and spit them out, and he didn't. And so it's got to give you pause.
Our buddy Justice Mosqueda has talked about Darnold ad nauseum because he's never been really a fan. When you look at his overall, and this is the stat that always jumps out at me, Darnold has thrown 6 touchdowns. Or sorry, has thrown more interceptions than touchdowns against bowl teams in the regular season. I mean, that's crazy. And I think you kind of hit on it. Do we overplay the Rose Bowl comeback last year? Like, are we putting too much into his Rose Bowl performance last year? At this point, at this juncture? Or is that fair to, you know, kind of make that the game that kind of defines who he is?
Well, I think that's a good question, and I think it's going to allow us to segue into the next guy too. So going back to Kizer, I think a lot of people put a lot of stock into the comeback that he had against Texas, and even though that didn't result in a win, he made some big boy throws in that game. And that really elevated his stock initially. That was a week one performance. And, of course, he wasn't able to really build off that as much as we thought that he might throughout the season. I still thought that there was enough there for him to be a first-round pick. Darnold had that big boy comeback performance against Penn State in the Rose Bowl last year. And that took him from a guy who – probably, in my opinion, probably wasn't in consideration for being a draft prospect this year because he's only a redshirt sophomore, to being a potential number one pick, which was crazy. It was one game. So now I think kind of the chickens are coming home to roost and everybody's taking a step back and saying, wait a second, that was only his 10th start, and against Western Michigan, it wasn't really the best thing. So then we can segue from that into what Josh Rosen did on Sunday, where this is a guy who was kind of anointed after his first start as a freshman 2 years ago, and they had the shoulder injury last year. They had a bad team. They finished 4-8, just like Kaiser's Notre Dame team. And we weren't sure how Rosen would come back. And in the first half this week, it was so ugly that at some point they were down 44-10. And he leads this furious, furious comeback. He throws for almost 300 yards in the fourth quarter. In the fourth quarter, he ends up with almost 500 yards, four touchdowns, no picks, two picks were dropped, one right through the hands that became a touchdown pass. We immediately heard Rosen number one pick as soon as that game ended, as if the first half didn't happen, as if the first three quarters didn't happen, as if the two picks that should have been picks didn't happen. And so it was almost like a deja vu moment for me where, you know, to your point about Darnold, are we only counting last year's Rose Bowl? That's how I felt about Rosen. Are we only counting the fourth quarter of this Texas A&M game where Texas A&M just flat out choked? They choked. And Rosen, great comeback. He made some really clutch throws, and he came up big time. There's no doubt that the guy – I love that he didn't quit because he was getting pummeled in the first half. His line was doing him no favors. But there are some very ugly moments in that game for him. The interception or the touchdown I talked about that went right through the safety's hands into the receivers for a touchdown, that was a huge turning point. And in the first half, he takes a frontside sack that he absolutely should have seen coming that turns into a fumble and a turnover that puts him in an even deeper hole. There were a lot of things he did that put them in that position to need to come back in the first place. Now, to his credit, he didn't quit and he did come back. And I think he's a talented kid. To your point, it's a what have you done for me lately? And I guess if we're going by that logic, Rosen is back to number one and Darnold takes a step back and Josh Allen takes two steps back. And now the guy we're going to talk about next, he jumps right to the forefront, right?
Yeah, and it was a question we had from the beginning is why is Lamar Jackson not the best quarterback in this class? He's been the only consistent performer of the bunch. Is he as talented as Josh Rosen? Maybe, as a pure quarterback? Probably not. But he's been on the field, and availability is the most important attribute to any prospect. When you look at Darnold, when you look at Allen, Jackson has done it for a longer period of time. And I just don't understand why, one, we wanted to move this kid, why we didn't want to leave him as a quarterback, but two, why coming into this year, he wasn't the one being talked about. I understand that he's not your prototypical NFL quarterback, but maybe that's what the NFL needs right now, is to stop trying to stop overdrafting guys like Blake Bortles and Jared Goff and try to find a guy that is a little undersized in terms of he's only 210 pounds, that may need to work on some things from the pocket, but can do things that other quarterbacks just could never dream of. And I do think we saw that a little bit this year with Mahomes going early, with even Trubisky going early. He's only 6'2", but he's 200 and 20 pounds. And even Watson going early. Maybe the NFL is willing to, or is beginning to maneuver from that. But then you get a class like this, or a proposed class like this with a Darnold and Allen, and you're talking about a 6'4 and a 6'5 quarterback who, you know, looked the part, stand in the pocket. And so a guy like Lamar Jackson just gets overlooked.
What I love about Lamar Jackson so far is that he looks like he continues to improve as a passer. Now, somewhat to his detriment on Saturday against Purdue, he almost looked like he was overthinking staying in the pocket when you could see it almost looked like he was ready to flee, like he was ready to run, and he pulled himself back, but he was still making big-time throws. And there were another couple times where he had to be flushed from the pocket and he was able to reset and throw and it looked natural. And I think that's what you want to see is the improvement as a passer, because we already knew this guy was a great athlete. And we already knew he's like – I was watching this game actually on Sunday on a replay. I had recorded it, and I was watching it, and my wife was sitting next to me, and she goes, that guy looks like an NFL player. And I said, see, if it's that obvious to somebody who doesn't do this on the regular, I think it's pretty obvious. He does look like an NFL player. I think he's a little bit bigger, Seth, than 210. I think he looked more filled out to me this year. The arm strength is there. I thought he looked like a more accurate passer. On Saturday against Purdue, he made some really nice passes. And as I just said, he did a good job, in my opinion, of resetting and keeping that pocket. Now, he did still run. He ran for 107 yards. He had one fumble, but he had no interceptions. He was 30 for 46 in the game, which is a better completion percentage than what he's had throughout his career to this point. And more importantly, in my mind, he was 8 for 11 with 6 first downs on third downs. On all his third down passes, he was 8 for 11 and converted 6 first downs. He was 3 for 4, converting 3 first downs on third down and 7 or longer. He was 5 for 9 with 2 touchdowns in the red zone. They also had a fumbled exchange. That fumble that he had came on a fumbled exchange in the red zone. So there was that, but generally speaking, he came through in the situational quarterback play that you want a guy to come through on, third downs, third and longs, red zones, and he was just – I thought he looked like a quarterback one this week. We'll see if he builds off that. Obviously, Purdue is not a top Big Ten team, but we talked about Purdue in our Big Ten preview. New coaching staff, Jeff Brohm's there. He brings a little bit of pedigree from what he did at Western Kentucky. And it was interesting watching this game too, because I think Lamar Jackson broke some of Jeff Brohm's records from Louisville in the early course of this game. So my eye is trained to Lamar Jackson at this point, because of all the players I watched, of all the quarterbacks especially, he looked like the best one, and I don't think it was particularly close this week.
The one name that we talked about in our Big Ten preview, but he may have surprised people this week, was Clayton Thorson, the quarterback from Northwestern, who led them to a win over Nevada this week. I mean, Thorson is a guy, we've talked about it, he's going to get the NFL – you know, size bump. But he's a great athlete. And obviously he's at Northwestern, so he's a smart kid. Are we talking about, you know, a potential day three guy, maybe a guy, again, we're not going to call Thorson an NFL starter by any means, but are we talking about a guy that can make a roster at this point?
Oh, I think Clayton Thorson's a party crasher. Like, he's got that. He's 6'4", 220. He was a 4-star recruit. He's got a strong arm, and he's a little bit of an athlete. And I think that he can make some noise. I'm not sure. My question is, do people think Clayton Thorson could declare a year early? Because we don't see that coming out of Northwestern that often. He's a redshirt junior, so could he be an early entry guy with a year of eligibility remaining? Certainly, I think he's draftable. In fact, I think he's the best quarterback I've seen out of Northwestern. And as long as I can remember, they had Dan Persa, who was an undersized guy. He didn't have nearly the throwing arm that I see out of Thorson. And then they had Trevor Siemian, who I couldn't believe was even drafted and who's actually starting games for the Denver Broncos now. I think Thorson's a much better prospect than either one of those guys. And my question about him was going to be accuracy. It's still going to be accuracy at this point, but he came through with a big game this weekend, and I think he's got plenty of arm. I think he has they were running some option with him, which I don't think is his game, but it shows that he's a better athlete than some of these other guys. Like he's not Josh Allen type of athlete. He's obviously not Lamar Jackson type of athlete, but I think he's probably a better athlete than Sam Darnold. I think he's probably a better athlete. I mean, he's for sure a better athlete than a Mason Rudolph or than a Mike White from Western Kentucky, who I've seen hyped a little bit to this point. So I think Thorson's a party crasher. If he can continue with his role, Northwestern has potential. This is going to sound crazy. Northwestern has potential to be a double-digit win team this year and compete in their division. I think the only team that's really standing in their way in their division in the Big Ten is Wisconsin. So if Northwestern wins 10 games and Thorson's completing over 60% of his passes, this guy could be a day two guy. I'm not saying he could be a drafted guy. He could be a day two guy. So I'm keeping a close eye on him. He was very impressive to me, not initially, but as the game went on and they gave him more throws to make, he really made those throws.
Mason Rudolph had a big game statistically. However, if you look at two of those touchdown passes he threw, there was a lot of reliance on receivers to make plays. Now, you and I have talked about this, that we always will say that's good quarterbacking. However, on at least one of those throws, James Washington had his man beat by about 9 yards, and Rudolph underthrew him by about 12. And Washington had to come all the way back and catch the ball and then still scored. When you look at that, that's where I came up with kind of my Mike Glennon comparison. And again, it's not a knock. I mean, we're talking about Mike Glennon just got $45 million from the Chicago Bears. Like, that's not a knock on him at all. But I think Rudolph is a guy that gets hyped because of his size, but he's not a guy that has a great arm. He's not a guy that can spin the ball down the field with a ton of ease. And I think we saw that on a couple of those throws.
Yeah, you're right. I think we talked about this in our Big 12 preview that we had higher hopes for Rudolph than what we've seen since then, since the preview to last season. And he will, you know, he has that spot thrower deep ball where he can put it up for his guy and make the play. What I like about him is that he's a smooth passer. Like, he has a nice, smooth, calm delivery. He gets the ball out quickly and decisively, which is great, but he doesn't look like a first-round guy to me just because of the physical attributes. He's not a great athlete. He's not – I mean, they do – they did run him, I think, on a read option, on zone read for one first down. It was kind of painful to watch. he's not a quick-footed guy. He's not an oaf by any means, but he's not fast. And then he just doesn't have that velocity. And it's not that he can't zip the ball in the short area. He can, but he doesn't have that arm strength to make those deep outs. And there was one play in particular I remember where he makes one of those throws, and it's just barely complete. If there was a better defensive back, I think it could have been jumped for a pick six. There's another play I can remember distinctly from last week's game where he gets flushed to his left, and he's rolling left. And as a right-hander, this is a tough play to make, but he has to throw it downfield, down the left sideline, as he's getting flushed, rolling out. And he just leaves it about 15 yards short. Like, no exaggeration. He left it way short. This isn't that wasn't a throwaway play, because if it's a throwaway, he's throwing it out of bounds. All he had to do was throw it out of bounds. He was trying to get it downfield, and it was just way, way short. I don't think he has the gun that you would think that a 6'4", 235-pound guy would have. That doesn't mean he sucks, but I think there are legit criticisms of him. I've seen people very harsh on his accuracy, and I'm not sure that I share those concerns. But to me, it's more the physical tools of the guy. I just don't think he's like the most physically gifted guy to be drafted early. I still think he's being a little bit undersold by people who really act like he's terrible and that he's just a product of the system. I think that he kind of makes their system run a lot better than it could.
When you look at this upcoming week, there's a bevy of intriguing games that we're going to get. Starting off with Pitt, who narrowly escaped, I believe it was Youngstown State, wasn't it? So
right, yeah. Youngstown State, I mean, the Penguins.
That's right. And they're taking on Penn State. This is going to be a lot about Barkley, the running back from Penn State. But I think we want to see a little bit more from the Pitt prospects this week. Again, a narrow victory over a D1AA program, a very talented D1AA program at that. Like,
Youngstown State, coached by Bo Pelini, they were in the championship last year at FCS level. So not a slouch FCS program, but still, Pitt upset Penn State last year.
When you look at Penn State, outside of Barkley, who are you going to be watching in this game? And is the Pitt offense, will that not allow us to get a great read on some of the Penn State defensive players?
I guess we would be watching like Jason Kabinda and Marcus Allen on the Penn State defense. But yeah, at these early stages, I'm watching the top guys. I'm watching Saquon Barkley, who had Saquon Barkley had 130 total yards and 5 touchdowns last year against Pitt in a loss, in an upset loss. The thing was, Barkley had averaged only 4.3 yards per carry in that game. So it was one of his low yards per carry games, although he was highly productive, obviously, with the scoring. He saw the end zone 5 times, 4 times on rushes and once on a reception. And so, I mean, we're also going to be watching Trace McSorley, right? Because as we talked about with Sam Darnold, as much as Sam Darnold was riding on that Rose Bowl performance, Trace McSorley was riding high off performances in the Big Ten championship game and the Rose Bowl himself. He's a junior. Let's see, is this guy a legitimate pro prospect? He's very undersized as far as quarterbacks go, but I think people will be keeping an eye on him. On the Pitt side, you've got Max Brown, who in their first game, he was not necessarily impressive at all, but he was efficient. He was an efficient player for them, and he was able to convert third downs. He was 6 for 7 with 6 first downs and a touchdown on third down, and they only had 1 third and long. He was 1 for 1 with a touchdown in that situation, and he was 2 for 3 with a touchdown in the red zone, but they didn't ask much out of him, much like they didn't ask out of Nate Peterman last year. So Dax Brown still holding as our big graduate transfer big, tall, white guy prospect, he did exactly kind of what we think that guy's going to do from week to week. And he's, you know, he's right on track to be a fourth round pick and be hyped as a first round pick.
Auburn at Clemson, this game could have national title implications. But more than that, it could really be a coming out party for Jarrett Stidham, the quarterback of Auburn, who had a nice first week at Auburn. Clemson, meanwhile, has a talented defense led by Christian Wilkins. Is this a game where you could see Stidham really making his mark?
He has to. He goes out there. He does his job. You know, Auburn beats them handily, but Stidham, two touchdowns and a pick passing. He did have the one rushing touchdown. We know he's a very good athlete. He didn't do much on the ground for them, and I think that's probably a product of Auburn kind of holding back against an inferior opponent in a game that they were cruising. But you still would love to see a touted guy come out and dominate, and that's not quite what we saw out of this performance. Now he's got Clemson, and he's got his work cut out for him because they have three really highly touted draft-eligible guys along that front seven in Christian Wilkins, and Cleland Farrell, the defensive end, and then Kendall Joseph, the linebacker. So he's got his work cut out for him. I think they're getting their running back, Cameron Petway, back after a one-game suspension. So they get a little bit of a boost from the skill player perspective, but I'm still not quite sure Auburn has the skill guys to support Stidham against an opponent like Clemson. So this is going to be very, very interesting. On the flip side, you know, Clemson's skill players, a lot of them are very young and not draft eligible. Deion Kane only had two catches last week, but I think he had a touchdown. So you know, Auburn's got their work cut out for them. I don't think this is at all a national championship preview because I don't think either one of these teams is going to have the staying power down the road. But if I had to bet on one of the two, it would be Clemson. And because they're at Clemson, I think Clemson is going to pull this one out. Stidham has a chance to vault himself into the discussion if he surprises and shocks and has a great game this week.
Stanford, coming off their obliteration of Rice, takes on USC, who probably needs to make a statement this weekend. There are definite questions whether or not USC will be able to handle the physicality of the Stanford team, both on offense and defense, something we have seen from the Stanford Cardinal is that they love bully ball. Could this kind of be a make or break game for Sam Darnold? And then let's talk a little bit about how good Ronald Jones was in his debut last week. Obviously not his career debut, but his season debut. And if he's the kind of quiet assassin running back in this class, that's going to not get the love of guys like of Saquon Barkley and Darius Geis.
I don't think it's a make or break for Sam Darnold because he's only a redshirt sophomore. So I think Sam Darnold's in a really good position this year as a very young guy who's only starting his 11th game to lay an egg here or there because there's really no pressure on him to come out. The only pressure will come if he just like has this fantastic season. Now they're at USC. So there's pressure on him because he's playing at home. I think Stanford is a little bit of an unknown commodity because they have some new starters all along the offense. But I don't think it's like make or break for Darnold. I think it would really help him to have a great game. But I don't think that he needs to have the game of his life right now to solidify his draft stock down the road. I think he should just concentrate on taking care of the ball, not turning it over, throw a touchdown pass, convert those third downs like he did last week. I mean, that's big. He's part of the way there. Mechanically, that's one of the big drawbacks for Darnold, and that's nothing he's going to be able to fix in season. So I think that's just either going to be something where if he declares after the season, somebody's just going to have to be okay with that, or if he doesn't declare, it's going to be something that he needs to continue to work on. So he's going to be throwing to a secondary led by cornerback Quentin Meeks, who's very highly touted coming out of Stanford. But to me, I'm looking at these two running backs. Like you said, Ronald Jones, I think that there are some Jamal Charles comparisons out there, and I think they're legitimate. He's a speedster. He's a big play guy. And they have another running back, the freshman Carr, who's very good as well. But we saw last week against Western Michigan, even in a game where they knew they probably had in the bag, even though it was closer than it should have been, they still gave Ronald Jones the bulk of the carries in that game. And I think that's going to be – he's a guy they have to count on, and they should count on. He's a very, very gifted player, and he's going to turn out to be a low 4.4 or high 4.3 guy when it's all said and done. So I know I think that Jamal Charles comps come from him being like a thinner, high-cut looking guy, but he looked bigger, a little bit bigger to me this year. So I think he's still listed under 200 pounds, at least last time I checked, but I think he's probably above that just by looking at him. He looks a little bit more solid this year. And then we talked about Stanford's guy a couple weeks ago, Bryce Love, who just had that breakout running game again in Australia a couple weeks ago, where he didn't get involved in the passing game, but he was involved early and often in the running game and just kind of blew it out of the water. He's stepping in for Christian McCaffrey. So those are the two guys I'm really focused on in this game. Besides, Darnold's obvious. We're always going to be focused on him probably for the rest of his college career. But those two running backs, Ronald Jones and Bryce Love, I'm interested to see how they do against each other head-to-head.
The final game we're going to talk about, and it's the biggest game of the weekend, Oklahoma at Ohio State, number 5 versus number 2. We saw it today. We knew it was coming, but we saw it today. Baker Mayfield gets compared by anonymous NFL scout, I believe it was, or anonymous NFL executive, excuse me, to Russell Wilson. There's a lot of similarities in style.
And Johnny Manziel.
Right. But one thing that Russell Wilson has over all of these small QBs that are going to get compared to him is he has one of the biggest arms in the NFL. He has the ability to throw the ball to all levels of the field despite being short by NFL standards. And I don't think Baker Mayfield has that same arm talent.
You know, I don't know that he has that arm, but I think I undersold his arm a little bit prior to this season and now taking a look back at him. But I still think I still think that Russell Wilson and Johnny Manziel, I know, and Johnny Manziel were better prospects coming out. Because, again, not making excuses here, Johnny Manziel's problems were off the field. He showed he was capable of playing with the big boys. Can Mayfield do that? I don't know. I think I'm coming around a little bit. I don't think he's like one of these MAC quarterbacks. But we saw Mayfield have a hard time with Ohio State last year. And this year, Ohio State's defense – at least their front seven is arguably a better group. Now, their secondary has some new faces. They started slow last week. Richard Lego of Indiana picked them apart with some very precision passing in the first half. Even though Ohio State had really tight coverage, in particular Denzel Ward, He had tight coverage. He was still getting picked on. He ended up with 5 pass breakups and an interception in the game. Lego started hot. He cooled way off in the second half. Mayfield is coming off a game where he was 19 for 20 passing. So this guy was absolutely unstoppable last week. But, you know, Urban Meyer said it in his press conference. We didn't really get to see much out of them against UTEP because we don't, you know, UTEP isn't really much of a college program at this point. So it wasn't meant as a diss, I don't think, to Oklahoma. It was just meant as a matter of fact that, hey, they played UTEP last week. I think Mayfield's going to be challenged this week. Again, Denzel Ward, 5 pass breakups and 1 pick in 1 week is that's a huge game. And there are other plays where Indiana receivers, in particular Simi Cobbs, were picking the ball off the back of Ward's shoulder pads and the other defensive backs from Ohio State. So I thought that Ohio State had very tight coverage, and somehow Indiana was still completing passes in that first half. Second half, it wasn't going down like that. Ohio State pulled away easily. I think it's going to be a challenge. Oklahoma comes to Ohio State on the road. They're facing probably the best defensive line in college football. I know Alabama's got to be right up there too. Obviously, they're very, very gifted too. But Ohio State defensive line last week had 5 sacks. So Mayfield is a more athletic guy, much more athletic guy than Richard Lego is. But they're still going to have him running for his life. They had him running last week. I think this is a closer game than Ohio State, Oklahoma was last year. But I still think Ohio State's going to pull this one out, especially because they know they cannot come in sleepwalking like they did last week against Indiana. So Ohio State really picked up the pace. I think that the X factor for Oklahoma is the big tight end / big tight end receiver, Mark Andrews. That's a guy that Ohio State might not necessarily have an answer for. So if Mayfield come through and pick up Mark Andrews early and often, they might give him some early trouble, but I think Ohio State's got the dogs to really put this one away long term.
Let's get to some hot takes real quick before we get out of here.
We got a couple, man. The takes are heating up.
We're very appreciative of all of you guys and your takes and how awful they are. No, they're not. They're not terrible. I mean, they're bad, but they're not terrible.
But we're missing a lot of awful takes because we're just not on Twitter as often as we used to be.
Exactly. But this is actually, we'll let you start with one that you had, and then we'll end with the other hot take that we had.
Okay, so I talked about Quentin Flowers last week, the quarterback for University of South Florida, and I was pretty harsh in my assessment of his week one performance. And his week two performance, you know, USF is 2-0, so give him that. But his week two performance didn't go much better. Here's a tweet from Mark Chisholm at Mark Sharp Tampa. He's replying here, so I'm just going to read his tweet, not the tweet that he's replying to. But he says, Quinn Flowers is better than Watson, Deshaun Watson, and as good as Lamar Jackson. Flowers is actually making limited reads this season and can do more if asked. That's bold to make those type of proclamations, to say that he's making limited reads and can do more if asked. How do we know when we make statements like that a player can do more if asked? There's no evidence to that. That's just purely speculative. And the proof is in the pudding. I talked about it last week. Flowers is not an accurate guy. He does have a nice deep ball, and he puts some nice trajectory on it. He does have some nice arm strength. I don't think he has a great delivery, and I don't think he has a great presence and a great poise when standing back there to throw. I think he's skittish at times, and I think he bails out of the pocket. And I think some of that's by design, but other, you know, there's evidence to the contrary of that too. To say he's better than Deshaun Watson, I mean, that might be some hindsight bias because Deshaun Watson didn't have a great preseason. As good as Lamar Jackson? Not from what I've seen, not by a long shot. And here are some numbers on Quentin Flowers so far. He's 0-for-7 on third and long, and he's 4-for-12 on all third downs with only 3 conversions passing through 2 games. Not off to a good start. I think that Quentin Flowers' hype will die a quick death if it hasn't already. I haven't heard anybody else talk about him. Mark obviously lives in the Florida area, so maybe he's seen more of him than other people, but I was a little surprised based on what I've seen of Quentin Flowers coming into the year that he was even being talked up. I've taken looks at him the last 2 weeks, and for me, it's just not there.
The last kind of hot take we have is something that we've seen kind of become tradition every year, and it's when a group on Twitter or a group of draft guys, all good guys, all guys that work hard, but have a similar take on a prospect, and then when that prospect doesn't make the roster coming out of training camp and preseason, there's befuddlement. So this one actually hit close to home for me. Dorian Johnson, Arizona Cardinals, great 4th-round pick, was cut by the Arizona Cardinals. Now he's brought back to the practice squad. And John Ledyard tweeted out, this isn't everything, of course, but I've gone around to all the draft guides I have and looked at evals of Dorian Johnson. Bizarre cut. I had him ranked 52nd on my board with a late 2nd-round grade. Kyle Krabs, 21st, early 2nd. Joe Marino, 25th, a 2nd-round grade. Lance Zierlein, 2nd, 3rd-round grade. Step into a starter's role right away. And Dane Brugler's had him as a 2nd, 3rd-round grade. What got brought up was his liver enzyme issue that he has. And that was the reason he was cut.
So he should be out of the league then, right?
Right. I'm here to tell you that's not the reason he was cut. And
but he's on – you said he's on the practice squad, right?
Right.
So he's cleared medically, correct?
Yeah, there's no medical issues. In fact –
just wanted to be clear here.
In fact, there was a huge article in ESPN about how his liver enzyme issue has actually gotten better since he – got to the NFL because he's been able to eat better, take care of himself a little bit. The reason he got cut was because he was really, really bad at football. And I wrote about this on Revenge of the Birds, the website that I run, the website that Justin covers the NFL draft for. I wrote about this because my question was simply, did he get a bump because much like the pro style quarterbacks that we always hear about, was this a offensive line bump because he's in a pro system, he's in a power system at Pittsburgh where they ask him to do some polling, where they ask him to do some things that they want done at the NFL level, a more NFL like scheme and system? So did he get bumped up by scouts because of that, by guys that work on the draft because of that, because it was an easier grading in terms of what you think you're going to see from him at the next level. And I can tell you this, and you talked about this post-draft, and you talked about why you wouldn't have even drafted him. And that's because as an athlete, well, he wasn't. And that was the biggest issue.
One of the things I've noticed over the years is that when a player comes out, he's got these shuttle times that are 8 seconds or higher in the 3-cone, 5 seconds or higher in the short shuttle and the 20-yard shuttle. It indicates a player that doesn't move well in short areas. So if you're seeing a player having success pulling and then he tests out with 8 second, 5 second times, it's not going to translate. It's more than likely not going to translate. There are going to be exceptions, but in my experience, albeit recent experience, you're not going to miss a lot if you just flat out rule those players out. If you just weed them out because they can't move. Now, this isn't a player who we heard about having a leg injury or some kind of muscle pull, some kind of ankle injury, some kind of foot thing that caused him to not be able to move well laterally. This is a player who we heard had a liver enzyme issue. Well, that was apparently enough of a red flag for a lot of teams to scratch him to begin with, but it's apparently not enough of an issue to keep him out of the NFL. He's still able to play, and I say that in quotes, quote unquote play, but can he actually move well enough at an NFL level? And I think I've seen this over time now. I remember the Florida State offensive lineman, Trey Jackson, Bobby Hart. I mean, these guys, some of them get cups of coffee in the NFL, but they fizzle out quickly. Eric Flowers is a guy who didn't move particularly well. There are a number of them, and if I had to make a list, I could. What we see is there are players who are counted on, and maybe even if they played offensive tackle in college and they have to move to guard, or if people think they might be able to move to guard, they still have to be able to move, to actually physically move, and these guys aren't able to do it. Remember, this is the NFL, and it's not just that a good college player can automatically become a good NFL player. So I think they're, you know, I really have hangups at this point, having done this for a number of years. I really have hangups about offensive linemen who can't move laterally, can't do these shuttles in a quick manner, and also with corners and wide receivers who just can't run fast. Because guys that run 4.6 at corner and receiver, those guys are a dime a dozen too. And I'm just not going to spend draft picks, draft capital on players like that. Yeah, there are going to be exceptions, and I'm happy to miss on the exceptions than to try and spend a lot of time justifying why a guy might be an exception. It was easy for me to rule out Dorian Johnson for a number of reasons. He wasn't a good athlete. To me, he wasn't an NFL caliber athlete. And I had the health problem, and I was out early with that guy. I didn't have to blink an eye. I'm not saying that my way is the right way. We talk about our misses every year, but it's remarkable to me that so many people had him ranked on day two, despite
those all the red flags. I mean,
there were two very glaring flags. One, he couldn't move, and two, he was sick.
Right, and so, yeah, I mean, that's what it comes down to. Is sometimes it's comfortable to miss with a group, and Kyle Krabs is somebody that, I mean, his ratings are completely out there. So, you know, I would never say that he was in this group think type of thing, because, you know, we've seen Kyle have Mike Evans rated like 400th on his board, and I'm only slightly.
I think he had Johnson in this case ranked higher than the other guys.
He had a
point. And I don't necessarily, you know, I know all these guys. I don't think that I don't want to classify this as groupthink, because I don't necessarily think that's it, because they all have thoughts on prospects that vary outside the norm. It just happened to be, I think as John kind of put it, it just happened to be they all aligned on this one guy. We could say that's probably coincidentally. I don't think they all got together and huddled up and said, this guy is a day two player. But it just says something that, and because obviously too, the NFL disagreed. They took him on day. They took him on what, fourth round?
Yeah, fourth round pick.
But I think the glaring one to me is Lance Zierlein, whose father is an offensive line coach who's supposed to be some guy that's in the know. He's
the Arizona Cardinals offensive line coach
who took him in the fourth round.
Right.
So father and son aren't communicating necessarily.
But yeah, so you know, when you look at it overall, I think you have to I think you look at it and you're comfortable with asking the question of, you know, what did you do wrong in this process? And again, that's not a shot at anybody. That's not you or I taking a shot or saying that you guys are bad or this or that. This is a legitimate question. Like, what could you have done to do better so that this didn't happen? And what did you miss?
And I would say, you know, to piggyback off that point, I would encourage people, and I've been doing this for a couple of years now, I would encourage people to start using more process of elimination. Stop tying yourself to guys that just don't have the requisite level of experience or athleticism, age. They're too old. They're not productive college players. If you just start cutting those chunks out of your evaluations, you will have more success. Maybe not more success, but fewer failures, fewer misses.
Well, and I think, you know, you hit on it, and I thought it was a salient point, is that when you're able to eliminate prospects, you're going to miss on outliers. And missing on an outlier is okay. Missing on an Antonio Brown is okay. Missing on a Dak Prescott is okay. You don't want to be reaching for those guys. You don't want to be reaching for a guy that is 5'11 and ran a, you know, 4'5 in the first round. You don't want to be reaching for a SEC quarterback who is slightly undersized and, you know, didn't put up huge numbers, that you'd have to really go back and find the nuance of what his game was.
Right. You might miss on Antonio Brown, although I still say that I would have taken Antonio Brown in the area where he was taken. So I consider that for Pittsburgh an element of good scouting. But if you start reaching for Antonio Browns, if you start trying to, and that's what we saw out of the Mike Thomas, Southern Mississippi. That's what we saw out of Rashard Higgins, who's now been cut and is on Cleveland Browns practice squad. When you start reaching for those things, then you're going to run into trouble. So, I mean, there are elements of good scouting. There are times when that might hit a home run. Just because Alfred Morris rushed for 1,500 or 1,600 yards as a rookie doesn't mean that was that he was a great prospect. Obviously, he fell out of favor pretty quickly after that. Sometimes guys just get put in a situation where they're successful early. The Antonio Browns are rare. Dak Prescott, I think you could make an argument that if I ruled him out, that that's a whiff. And I need to go back and look at why. But, I think I really do support analysts just cutting some of the fat off of their evaluations, because it's going to help you avoid some of these perpetual misses that come up every single year. And what for example, guys like Dorian Johnson who don't have those shuttle times, those guys don't end up being starting offensive linemen in the NFL.
Anything else before we get out of here?
No, I think Seth and I both have to go to weddings this weekend, so fill us in on all the football action. No, yes. I mean, I'm going to record some games. I'm going to try and catch up to speed the best that I can. We're going to try and bring you a good show next week. This week was a little bit of an outlier because we got some live coverage in, and I had a lot of time to digest games over the holiday weekend. So we're going to do the best that we can to keep up. Follow us on Twitter @SCoxFB for Seth, @AFC the number two NFC for me, and go to revengeofthebirds.com for draft coverage, analysis, and all that good stuff. We're season's in full swing. The NFL season starts this week. I'm pumped. I'm sorry that I have to miss some of the games, but you know, when you're adulting, sometimes weddings are part of that.
Yeah. I'll be flying out to Seattle, so.
And I'll be in Ohio.
Yeah. So check us out on SoundCloud. Check us out on iTunes. We're on Blog Talk Radio. You can also find us on Stitcher now. So we're basically everywhere podcasts play. Download it. Give us a rating. We appreciate your time as always. We'll be back next week. Maybe two shows. We'll see how caught up we can get after the wedding weekend. So it might be one more week before we get you two shows. But have a good night, everybody, and thanks for listening.